You're listening to the TrekMate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek The Next Generation. Tonight's episode is Schisms. I'm Colin from Warwickshire in England.
And I'm James from London.
And I'm Lou from Nebraska having schisms.
That's an understatement.
Oh my goodness. I think subspace is interfering with our transmission here.
Yeah. Oh, you haven't even turned Geordi's visor on yet.
No. Oh my goodness. Okay, I'm sorry, guys. So Colin, how you been, bud?
I've been good. I've been really good.
You've been good, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. Well then, it's good to have
nice
you.
Nice to see you
up.
Better, by the way, Lou.
I'm sorry.
Nice to see you well again.
Well, oh, you really? Was I sick from?
Yeah, you didn't do the one because you were sick.
I don't remember. Yeah, it's...
Must be good medicine.
Yeah, sometimes. Just stay in bed. It's the best thing to do. Okay. So let's say, last we had you on was for Times Arrow Part 1 and 2 with Kieran McDuff. How have you been in the last... Well, it's actually 3 episodes ago, but what, 3 months? How have you been lately?
I didn't do Times Arrow.
You didn't do Times Arrow? Oh, you didn't.
No,
so was...
That was Chris.
I have Colin and Kieran.
No, it was Chris and Kieran, because I've listened to it.
Oh! Oh my goodness, how did I screw that up? Okay, well then, let's see.
Hi, Chris.
Hey, Chris, what's happening? Hey, why not? We're just going to screw this whole thing up. How about The Inner Light? Were you on for that?
Yeah, that was the last one I did, The Inner Light.
There you go.
When was The Inner Light?
About a year ago.
About a year ago, yeah.
No, but The Inner Light, wasn't The Inner Light when I was on holiday in Holland?
Yes.
I'm getting flashbacks to that. We were in Holland.
Yes,
you
did it from Holland, James.
I did. But that was like a year, that was nearly a year ago. Oh, and it was only, it's not that far back, right?
Well, you know, Substice has been interfering with podcast production.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's quite shocking.
I haven't got the nerve yet to say, hey, we're recording on this date, be here or be square. I can't do that. I want to have the guest on, and if that means we have to wait another week or two, we're going to wait another week or two. But I don't know. Anyway, okay, well, it's good to have you on.
No, James, we've had a few problems. I mean, Lou was ill, and then you had, like, you know, family stuff. So, you know, we put this off twice. So this is 3 weeks later than what we planned anyway, so...
No, true. However, I mean, I think I've mentioned this to Lou, and I don't know if I've mentioned on the show, but next summer, we're heading over to Japan for, like, a really extended long holiday. And it was always my intention to be finished by then. But hey, that ain't happening. I mean, maybe we'll
be finished by TNG.
Yeah, the original intention was that.
No, you've been going to do that.
Now it appears unlikely. I accept.
You were going to do that anyway.
Well, now it appears unlikely. I agree, but I at some point I worked out the numbers and I thought, yeah, we can hit it. We can hit it.
How many weeks away is that?
I mean, it's let's say 30.
Yeah.
For sake of argument,
we're not going to do it. We'll have to start recording extra shows.
Yeah, okay, right. So unless you do two per recording, then you might do it.
That's what we used to do. Yeah, we did before.
Yeah, but that's when we used to have this philosophical idea that the episode would only be 30 minutes long, Lou.
Yeah, no kidding. This might be. I don't know what else, what a lot of there's to talk about, but we'll get to that. Why don't you start with the synopsis? Go ahead.
Right. The synopsis for tonight's episode is, Enterprise crew members report that they are go to sleep but wake up exhausted. A mysterious subspace pocket forms inside a cargo bay, and this is the fifth episode of Season 6 of Star Trek The Next Generation. The original release date is October the 19th, 1992. This is written by Jean-Louise Mathis and Ron Wilkerson, teleplayed by Brandon Braga, directed by Rob Wilmer, and guest stars include Leonard Chapman as Cyril Rager, who finally gets a name in this episode.
Yeah, really.
Ken Forley as Mr. Mutt. Angela, I ain't even going to pronounce that. I ain't going to attempt that. Hi, Angela. Scott Trust as Lieutenant Shipley, and Angela McCabe as unknown crewman. Where's Ensign Ricky when you want him?
Fiordelisi. Anyway.
Yeah, something like that, yeah. John Nelson as medical technician, and Michelle Barrett as the voice of the computer. So, thoughts of this episode?
Colin, give us a brief idea of what you think.
Well, watching this and knowing I was going to come on here to talk about it, I was thinking James is going to have problems with the subspace stuff. Bearing in mind that they also ripped this episode off in Voyager. They basically redo a version of it. But the premise is good. There's flaws in its execution. But the premise is good. You got to bear in mind when it was showing, there was all the hype about alien abductions at the time that this was showing. X-Files was ruling the TV ratings. So this was Star Trek getting in on that genre. Overall, it's an enjoyable romp, but we'll get more in depth as we go along. What do you two think?
James?
Okay, I always like it when people assume that I'm going to have an opinion. That's always good. I'm just actually reading through my notes because Colin said that I'll have a problem with subspace. And the only thing that I've not put on the subspace is that isolate exact set in subspace. And then I've got in brackets, I like the tech talk. I like this one. I think this one's absolutely wonderful. I don't have any complaints, really, of anything of substance. Now, which one was the one in Voyager that they did like this?
Yeah, I didn't get that either.
Because I mean...
hang on, let me check my notes. Scientific method.
Oh, that wasn't the same. But scientific method is absolutely fantastic. I absolutely love my scientific method. That's the one, Lou, where they keep doing experiments on the crew, including Janeway, to the extent that she gets so annoyed, she's going to take them into the sun or into the black hole or whatever it was. That is fantastic, that episode. That's one of my favorites. Right. Yeah, but I can see the similarities now.
Yeah, makes sense. Okay, for me, this is... it's a very strange episode, and, you know, it even for its day... gets a little creepy too. I mean, at the near the end, it's just bizarre. It's a bizarre episode, but I like it a lot. So we'll see what we got here. Okay, so the Enterprise has entered the Amagosa Diaspora. Doesn't that sound Italian? Hey, my name is Amagosa Diaspora.
I'm pretty sure I've ordered one of those on a menu.
Yes, I'll take the Amagosa Diaspora.
Sounds like a drink, actually.
Yeah, yeah. Make it a virgin. Not sure what part of that is the alcohol content, but anyway, it's a globular cluster that is very dense and very creepy. James, you're going to be schooling us the entire episode.
I'm not.
Yes, you are.
I'm not.
Globular cluster. It sounds like a cluster mess.
So here's the thing. I don't recognize the word globular.
Oh.
I find that on the first hearing of that word, it sounds so ridiculous that I had no intention of Googling it. I assume they've made it up because it sounds ridiculous.
Did you also notice, though, that they never actually entered it? You never see the, you know, in the Mutara Nebula, they actually go into it.
Hmm.
all the outside shots of the ship, it's never actually in the cluster. It's just on it's just like the cluster's on the screen, but they're not actually anywhere near it. Yet they make references to flying across it, but they never actually enter it.
Okay, so here I am. I'm a moron. Globular cluster, spherical collection of stars. Fine. It's a real thing.
Typically of old stars in an outer region, in the outer regions of the galaxy. Good. Well, it's big. It's big.
But here, it seems like globular is derived, or it has the root on from globe. But to me, why would you use the word globe? Why not just spherical? Okay, yeah. I've been schooled today.
Every All day right. is a good day when you learn something.
Yes, it is. Okay, so Commander Riker's just waking up. Don't you love those sinks they have? Water faucets and sinks. It's like water's always there and they just splash it up.
Yeah. So, and obviously you've got to have a space towel.
Yeah, the space towel. And the space clothes, too.
Yeah.
Okay.
I do like the drawers, though, in the quarters when they just press a button and the drawers open and close. I do like that.
Oh, that'd be so nice. It would be nice. But anyway, his little clock says it started at 46154.4 and the time is 10:37 a.m. Must be nice to get to sleep in late, huh?
So I think this is the only time we actually see someone check the clock in the quarters, isn't it?
Right.
Because normally they just ask the computer for the time, don't they?
Right, yeah. And I always thought that the time was built into the star date. I didn't realize that there was an actual clock. You know, like 43625.2 is like 2 a.m.
Yeah, so the time is built into the star date, right? That's true. The point is however much of the day you've gone through. So, I mean, was it point? Did you say it was 0.4?
0.4. That would seem a little late.
Well, no, 0.4 could be around, you know, so if 0.5 is going to be noon, right? So it's a little bit before noon, and it's obviously not going to say something silly like 0.4978623. So 14. Maybe to the nearest decimal, it probably is 0.4.
So if 5 is noon, would 0.4 be like 10 a.m.?
Well, it'll be just before noon. It'll be heading, if you divide up the before noon into 5 equal chunks, which will be about a couple of hours long each, right?
So seriously overslept then?
Well, it depends. Why would you, if you're on a spaceship, why would you maintain like a 24-hour clock? Would it even be necessary?
Because they're referencing TOS that they keep to standard time.
Earth time, wouldn't it be?
Yeah. They keep to standard GMT time.
GMT specifically.
Yeah, well, you got to remember in the future when you can beam from one side of the planet to the other, you're not going to have universal time zones because they'd just be nonsense.
I'm not entirely sure why we have time zones at the moment. If there's anything that I would advocate, I think we should get rid of time zones.
We should definitely get a daylight savings and get rid of that.
Yeah,
absolutely. I'm not so sure about that because I mean, what time is it there? 7:37.
Yeah. 7:37.
Is it dark?
It is.
Huh. By the way,
but to be clear, it's been dark since around 4.
Right. So I mean, it would seem a little strange over here that if we had 7:37 right now and it's so bright.
But the thing is, it's the same thing, right? It's just that what you're saying is that you should keep time fixed. Whereas all I'm saying is you should, you know, so you have a different time to us, but you have like a fixed part of that time for certain behavior, like, you know, waking up and going to sleep. All I would say is I don't see why it wouldn't make sense just to have the same time, but you have a different time when you wake up. So you'd wake up at 3 or at 11 or whatever, depending on which time zone you're in. I personally think it's better to float across the time rather than fix a time zone and expect behavior to be different, to be like normalized.
I don't know. Riker might also might not have actually overslept, because we've got to remember they were on, is it a three shift pattern? They run a three shift pattern, that's it.
Yeah.
So he might just be getting up for his shift.
Yeah, the, you know, A shift could be 7 to 3 or 8 to 4 or 9 to 5, 10 to 6. We never know. But he at least acknowledges that he was late. Sorry, I'm late. Which, then again, did he have to be sorry he's late? He's the boss. He'll show up when he wants to show up.
Yeah, the only person who's above him is the captain, so.
That's right, and the captain wasn't in the room, so nobody knows.
Nobody knows.
So, don't you just love it when Geordi gives out more information than he really needs to?
I rather like it when Geordi doesn't talk at all, but there you go.
Yeah. He says it would take 3 days to map out only 1/10 of this cluster. So naturally, it sounds like he should have said it'd take about 30 days.
Yeah. Well,
maybe. But then he says, however, we think we might be able to speed that up by doing a bit of something, a little bit of this, a little tweak of the deflector. I'll let Data explain it to you, whatever. But he projects it could increase efficiency by 25% or blah, 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 blah. How long, Geordi? 20 days? Thank you. That's what since we know what was going on with Riker, I think it'd be hilarious if he just said, shut. Just tell me how long.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Because that's what we was all thinking.
Yeah. How long? Just tell me how long.
Just get on with it. How long is it going to take?
Shut up. Data, how long?
Okay, so quick question. At this point, has Riker been abducted already?
No, oh, yeah. this is the first plot hole.
Okay, you think it's a plot hole? Because Geordi technically says we've been experimenting. So there is a suggestion they might have been doing something in the past. But you do then get the impression that he only puts on his new sensor array in the future from this point.
From this point, yeah. And then they reference the fact that the aliens got through because of the new sensor array.
That's right. So I think it's a stretch. I reckon that, you know, really the question here is that, is Riker lazy or is he actually being abducted yet? Or perhaps the third option here, has he been abducted by another set of aliens that are completely irrelevant to the plot this week?
I thought it was a separate thing that Geordi was working on that caused them to notice the ship. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it could have been an experiment, but I mean, the other thing to take in is one of the people who goes when we go to the holodeck, one of the people there is the woman at Data's poetry recital.
Oh, right.
Now she's not tired at the poetry recital, whereas Riker is.
No, she's just annoyed.
Yeah, she's just annoyed because everyone just wants to leave because he's boring as hell.
I think the real reason here is that they obviously paid for this woman for this episode and they were going to get a full dollar out of her.
But it's like like the woman sitting next to Picard. You never see her again.
No. Actually, I kind of wondered if she was with Picard.
Yeah, I did wonder that, yeah. Is she his guest? Is she, you know, his friend of the week?
Uh-huh. No. I think Picard gets laid more than we think he does.
Yeah, but he's the captain, so no one talks about it.
Yeah, of course not. No. Okay, so Data's poetry reading. Everyone is completely disinterested, so I have to wonder, why did they even go?
Being polite.
Yeah, but there's still another 1,038 people that could be there, too.
His best friend tries to get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, hang on a second. Hang on. Let me just... I need to, like, touch base with reality here for a second. Is this not the most fantastic scene in the entirety of TNG?
What, out to spot?
Yeah, I think it's wonderful.
It is a fan favorite, this scene. A lot of fans say it's a really, really funny scene because you know that every policy person in that room wants to leave.
No. I mean, genuinely think that this is fantastic. So, it's been a while. Sorry?
Fantastic how? You like the poem?
The poem is wonderful.
Huh?
The poem is absolutely great. I think it's really, really good. And I love the way that, if you were to ask yourself the question, what kind of poem would Data write? This is the type of poem that Data would write.
He delivers it so flat.
No, it's not. It's the thing is that sometimes, actually, I do sometimes have a problem because, you know, okay, Data's the, you know, Data's the emotionless, the disconnected kind of, you know, looking onto human society from outside character, similar to Spock. Unlike Spock, every now and again, Data has this thing where he can turn on, you know, he can turn off his, you know, social anxiety personified, and then become kind of a, you know, a normal person in the crowd. So he does that when they have the, it's in a couple of episodes time with Starship Mine, where he starts end up doing small talk, or every now and again, he'll get into some of these acting roles, right? When he does,
that's his programmed learning though.
Yeah, but I always found that to be slightly uncomfortable because, you know, as a socially anxious teenager, I don't get to do that. So when I see here Data specifically, basically going through this in the way that you know that, you know, your version of Data would, rather than becoming all Thespian-like, which he did like in the Defector and stuff like that, I think it's much truer to the Data character, to the, you know, to the android. And I love the fact that he delivers this the way he does, and then he tries to follow up on feedback. And I love the poem. And by the way, when I watched this, I was in secondary school, and I had I've mentioned this before, but at my school, we actually had a Star Trek club at my school. We managed to get a couple of kids together, and we would watch Star Trek at lunchtime. Wow. And one of the it wasn't a nerdy school or anything. They were just there were like six nerds in the school that were prepared to watch Star Trek at lunchtime. But so one of my friends, we loved this episode, and it came out at the same time around we were maybe 14 or 15. My friend submitted Ode to Spot as English homework.
Oh. How'd that go?
I don't think he was picked up on it.
Really? So everybody thought, is Felis Catus, is your taxonomic nomenclature an endothermic quadruped carnivorous by nature?
I mean,
and everybody said, "Wow, that is original."
It is. Am I alone in thinking this is the most fantastic poem ever written?
Yes, as far as most fantastic poem ever written, as far as it being constructed and read by a computer, actually, that's probably what makes it pretty funny, is the fact that a walking computer wrote this to his cat, and he's using these words that a computer would use. That probably makes it funny. But
so you must like a fistful of dollars, then, Data's then, James. Because this Ode to Spot crops up in a Fistful of Data's.
Yeah, it does.
I haven't watched Fistful of Data's for a long time.
Yeah, Ode to Spot crops up in that again.
Okay, I have a problem with. I think I remember having a problem with the Fistful of Data's because they do the thing that they did with Paris a lot on Voyager, which is like, which one of our crew members has an interest in old westerns? Troy. Oh, yeah. I mean, what the. What?
Where'd that come from?
This week, which one of our characters is really keen on hot rods? Paris.
I mean, the thing is though with Paris is they did keep the 20th century thing going.
What? Mm-hmm. I mean, I'd argue that they just dumped all of the stuff onto him.
Yeah, anything to do with 20th century. I mean, when they went back in time, Paris was the man.
No, I don't think it was even that right, because I think it was, what options do they have? Whenever they needed a character that was male to pick something up, it was always Paris, because it wasn't going to be Chakotay, because nothing, he had no character. It wasn't going to be Tim, because he had no character either. So I think Paris was the one that won by default, because he was the only one that got anything written for him.
Yeah, okay. Well, anyway, we got to go back to this show.
I mean, name three interesting things about Chakotay.
He's got a tattoo.
Okuchimoya.
He can carve a bath from a tree.
Yeah.
I mean, I grant you the latter one. I think that would be interesting.
And he was about a day and a half away from shagging Janeway until Tuvok busted in on it.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Probably would have got a lot closer if that monkey weren't there and all.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, TNG.
Is that a euphemism?
Do you take it how you want.
Yeah. So everyone in this poetry reading was awake, except for Riker, who keeps falling asleep during the ode to Spot. I mean, he even snores pretty loudly until Deanna wakes him up. And... Sorry. Go on.
That's so wonderful.
Yeah, that was
funny. That was a really funny bit, yeah.
Yeah. Because then when he, you know, sorry about that. Okay, so he sits back down and... So, yeah, that's hilarious. It just ends it with him snoring. Time to visit sickbay. Doctor, I've been having trouble sleeping. No, I ain't having trouble sleeping. I just don't think I'm sleeping all night or something's going on. So what does she give him? A hot milk toddy.
Okay, so I'm going to complain here about Beverly, who was one of my favorite characters growing up. But in this episode, she's useless. You know, yeah. Despite clear evidence that something's wrong, she's incompetent. So it's like, Doctor, I can't sleep. Well, here's some cocoa. What do you want from me? Really? What?
Yeah, exactly.
Also, from a medical point of view, a hot toddy doesn't work.
Well, even if it's Picard's aunt, whatever her name was, is
no, it doesn't work.
Why? Because I've heard warm milk helps.
Yes, but alcohol is a stimulant.
Yeah. Okay. Stop. I'm sorry. I don't get it. I don't even know what a hot toddy is.
A hot toddy is milk, warm milk, with whiskey in it.
But we're likely to be in synthahol whiskey here, though, right?
Yeah, true, yeah.
And that might not be a stimulant.
It's my old Aunt Adele's recipe, and isn't this the Aunt Adele that used to cure people with herbs?
Anyway, I think it's a dereliction of duty anyway, from the doctor.
And also, how many recipes... This has got to be like the third or fourth time that someone's been prescribed hot milk for lack of sleep. Because didn't they do that in... Oh, the one where Deanna was flying.
To hide in the night.
Yeah.
Night terrors,
yeah.
Yeah, it's like, hey, doctor, I'm pretty sure someone's abducted me. I'm having these night terrors. Maybe someone's trying to communicate with me telepathically because, you know, I am a telepath. Oh, have some milk. I mean, really, it's come to this, has it? Okay, I'm alone. In calling out Troy and Crusher.
Crusher does make quite a few mistakes in this episode. I mean, the hot toddy's one of them. But, I mean, she doesn't make another mistake. She also tells him he's suffering from lack of REM sleep. Lack of REM sleep does not make you tired.
No, it makes you crazy, doesn't it?
Yeah, it makes you crazy. It does not make you tired. Because that's why they all went crazy in Night Terrors, because they wasn't getting any REM sleep.
Yeah, my wife suffered a lot from sleep deprivation when we had our second baby. We literally had like a 9-month period during which the child, I might use that word in as opposed to a stronger term that I should probably use, refused to sleep for more than like 2.5 hours in any given stretch. What? And it got to the point where she was hallucinating.
Oh no. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, Lou, you're coming through quite loud. Oh, now you've gone down.
Okay, well... Oh, I'm scared. Anyway. Somehow my microphone reverted to something else.
Oh, you wonder why you ain't tired.
Quiet. Exactly.
Lack of REM sleep.
Okay, let's talk about that lack of REM sleep as I realize that I'm glad that James is recording this show with me. Wasn't that just a guess that she was making?
No, she said it's a diagnosis. You are suffering from a lack of REM sleep.
Oh, wow.
Which would not make you tired. It would, like James said, it would make you want to kill people.
Yeah, make you crazy. Oh, okay. So anyway, Data wants a nice little review of his poetry reading. So what did you think of it, Geordi? LaForge, who would rather get a root canal than give an honest answer at this point, but Data insists. He tells him his readings were clever. Something was clever, and his something else was clever, and well, that was clever too, but an emotional response? No. I mean, couldn't, even if Data doesn't really get human emotions, can't he read people's faces by now? As they were all looking up, going, holy crap.
Well, we all had the same pained expression on, so we probably took that as normal.
Yeah. Hey, maybe everybody, maybe it's people are supposed to look bored when they're listening to poetry readings. Okay, so engineer receives a signal that there's an EPS explosion in Cargo Bay 4. Medical team's responding. Did you happen to notice that everybody on the medical team was kind of like on a leisurely stroll to Cargo Bay 4?
Yeah, I did notice that. And did you also notice no security people were just like, yeah, whatever.
I mean, there's no sense of urgency. Nobody's running to Cargo Bay 4 because they all have plasma burns. No, we'll get there eventually.
Yeah, we'll just stroll down there and take care of it, you know.
Actually, so this is actually a common thing throughout the episode. There's the bit, you know, I'm jumping ahead a bit, where the guy gets returned. Yeah. And it's like, I'm going to wander down. I'll see what he's up to. Yeah, don't call ahead or anything.
Yeah, but in fairness actually, to the medical teams on that one.
So I've just had a call at the door. Just hold on 1 minute.
All right, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say in that instance anyway, Crusher gives the wrong reference to where he is.
I forgot, where does she say he is?
She says in his quarters, Worf says that he's in his quarters on Deck 9, Section 17.
Mm-hmm.
And Crusher is treating, when Crusher calls for an infusion unit, she says Deck 9, Section 19.
Ah. He must be in Lucy's quarters instead.
Yeah. Instead, yes, in his girlfriend's quarters. So all the medical people probably went to Section 17, where Crusher's in Section 19.
That could be, which is why I noticed there were only two medical people responding to this emergency, too. Yeah.
They probably just come down that way in the turbo lift.
Yeah. You check 17, we're going to check 19.
Yeah.
He's been hanging around Lucy lately. She's pretty Lucy, too. Anyway. So, while we're waiting for James to come back...
I'm back now. Amazon delivery.
Isn't that great?
What?
Amazon delivery.
Well, no, because the doorbell was rung. Yeah. He then posted it through my letterbox. I then went over there, opened the door, and he was wandering off. I mean, either post it or ring. Don't do both.
Yeah, right. They do that. So, okay. Well, then I guess I don't get to tell... Colin about the boot.
The boot.
Yeah.
What's the difference between a trunk and a boot? Yeah, I've seen the email.
Exactly. You sent one? Okay. Well, I heard that about the boot. And I said, oh, that makes no sense. Why I call it a boot? Isn't a boot on your foot? Anyway, so.
It's where they used to put the footwear in the old days, hence the word boot.
Ah! Okay, that's cool. So anyway, they all arrive to Cargo Bay 4 as slowly as possible, only to find that everybody's just fine. It was a sensor glitch, and they're all inside wondering, why do we have 7 people staring at us? Don't know. But everything is just fine.
But on the plus side, they all got some of their 10,000 steps in.
Yes. Yes, they did. Yeah. So... Okay, so LaForge walks Riker to his quarters. Isn't that nice of him to drop him off at home and make sure he's okay? When Will asks Geordi, hey, you want to stop by here at 0700? I just can't get up. I can't wake up. Then he gets a little drink, probably his hot toddy, and he lays down. A few seconds later, beep, beep, beep. Come in. Crap. Good morning.
I do like the way they showed this from Riker's point of view.
Uh-huh.
So you went along with the fact that he hadn't actually gone to sleep yet, because you hadn't seen him go to sleep.
Yeah, no, you didn't. And Geordi walks in and says, good morning. Oh, by now Riker must be absolutely going crazy. Morning? I just went to bed. Commander, it's 0700. So yeah, I'm surprised Riker isn't going crazy right about now. Oh, we did forget to mention that while Crusher was examining him... You know, she's got the probe right next to his head, and he freaks out. You know, do you have to hold that so close? Sorry. Whew. Sorry.
But that's the first instance of when you notice it spreading across other personnel as well, because, you know, Worf with Mr. Mott.
Yes, that was what I was going to bring up next. So, and she said, if they're not squirming, we won't eat them. Was that the punchline of a Klingon joke?
I shouldn't imagine so. I mean, how many other people eat? I mean, yeah, Krenga eat tube grubs.
Tube grubs, yeah.
We know Norsicans will eat live food.
Yeah. I just assumed it was Gok. Yeah, the Gok. Well, I tell you that, Mr. Motz, Mr. Motz's a funny one. You know, at least to himself. Did you notice his co-worker giving him a lot of eyes when he hit his punchline?
Yes. Is this the last time we see Mr. Motz at all?
We don't see him again?
No, we don't see him again, no.
Oh, no! Mr. Motz! So anyway, right after the supposed Klingon joke, Mr. Worf comes in for a trim as, you know, he gets his... just as he starts to get his luxurious Klingon hair clipped, he has this reaction and grabs a barber's arm and removes those scissors. That's a little freaky, too. I mean, can you imagine being Mr. Mott? This Klingon's got your arm in his grip. I promise. Not too much off the top.
You could tell Mott was nervous about cutting his hair anyway.
Yeah. Oh, yeah! Yeah, hey, it's good to see you again this
week.
So soon. Oh, Lord. This isn't going to be fun. I don't know. Maybe punched him a couple times, turned his blue skin bruised. What do you think a blue face would bruise like?
James?
I don't know.
If I punched you square into your blue nose, what color will the bruise be?
More blue?
Hang on, there's gotta be images of Sran when he was fighting Archer on Enterprise.
Yeah, wasn't he more blue? I thought he was like...
Yeah, they have different shades of blue.
Like cuts to his face.
Wait a minute.
Yeah, he just went darker blue, didn't he?
Oh, yeah, you're right. Okay, so anyway. Okay, so Worf grabs the scissors and I guess maybe drops the mic and walks out. So LaForge is now getting a few problems with his visor, so it's now time for him to visit sickbay. And it turns out he has a slight bacterial infection. Not a clue how he got it. I don't know, maybe it was Data's poetry. After about an hour and a half, he returns to the cargo bay, only to find out Data's probably been slacking and watching YouTube porn and not doing his work. But as it turns out, he has no memory of the last hour and a half. So I'm curious. Okay, let's jump ahead. They took them for medical experiments. What would they have done with an android?
Well, hang on, he was only gone for an hour, right? So they pretty
hour,
got him
hour and a half.
Hour and a half.
What
yeah.
the hell is this? And then sent him back.
For an hour and a half? I mean, it makes no sense. I mean, yeah. Whoa, what are you? But then again, Data was never unconscious. I assume they waited till people were asleep. So,
was that by design or by accident?
I think it would be by design, because you don't want them.
Yeah, you don't want them knowing they're being taken.
But then, how were they aware that they were taking them during their sleep cycle, which would probably be different for each individual on the ship?
Well, they worked that out, didn't they? Because it was like the computer was monitoring people disappeared, and it was always when they was off duty.
Yeah, how would they even know they're in their bed? They have to be able to monitor them somehow.
Yeah, and you know, it's also like not to say that they're on the same time scale as us. You know, it's you know, to quote another like Meridian, they were on a different time scale to the rest of the galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. The aliens could be like that because they're in subspace. Mm-hmm. So, you know, 1.5 hours to Data could have been a whole day to them.
That's true.
Yeah, could be. All right. But I'm still trying to figure out how they would have gotten Data unconscious, or would they wipe his memory of that?
Well, they probably just deleted some files.
Yeah, that would make sense.
But I do find the idea, though, that, I mean, at least Riker has got serious issues with sleep. Geordi starts going on about, you know, his visor blacking out a couple of times, and then Data disappears for all intents and purposes and was not on the ship, right? Because they managed to track down the particle, warp particle whizmagic. Now, they're not taking this as seriously as I think they should be. I mean, they still seem to be quite relaxed at the idea that something really quite wrong is going on.
Yeah, well, this is another of the two plot points where it goes wrong, because Data, Crusher mentions that she examined Geordi earlier today, and then Data comes in and says his self-diagnosis confirms he was off the ship yesterday. Yet the cargo bay and Geordi's visor were supposed to be the same day. So that does that plot point too as well. And also, Worf was also being taken, but Worf wasn't suffering from fatigue.
Oh, Klingons.
Because Worf is a warrior.
Yeah. Doesn't need sleep.
He probably was suffering from fatigue. He's just not going to, admit it.
He's just not a crying baby like nope. Riker.
Nope. So anyway, I think... I guess we can't just skip it. I was going to say... Oh, hey, another thing I wanted to bring up. You guys mentioned how he was gone for an hour and a half, and Data may have been gone longer, who knows, but isn't there something wrong with the internal sensors if people just disappear out of nowhere?
Okay, so I was actually going to bring this up because it kind of naturally comes up a little bit later than this.
Yeah.
But my first instance was, why do you not monitor the crew? And then actually, it occurred to me, no, the computer does monitor the crew. It just doesn't think much of reporting when someone goes missing. Because it's like, hey, do we still have everyone? No, we lost two. When? A couple of hours ago. Mm. And you didn't think that it was important?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You also know it monitors the crew because it knows how many people are on the Enterprise. Because how else would it know when there's an intruder on board?
Yeah.
So it'd have to detect extra bodies. So it's definitely monitoring the crew.
Yeah.
You know, right. And doesn't the comm badge tell the computer where you are all the time? Because when they don't want to be found, they take the comm badge off, don't they?
Mm-hmm. Yep, they do. Okay, so Riker tries to move the ship for some reason because somebody needs to look out a different window. But he tries, the ensign, little ensign Rager can't figure out how to do it. So he says, oh, jeez. Why are you even in that chair? Let me... Oh, no. And he doesn't like it. He feels trapped. The control panel's driving him crazy, so he jumps out of there. Just leave us where we are. Go on, continue. Carry on.
Nothing to see here. That's the only time you see Riker fly the Enterprise D.
Really?
Yeah.
He's never in that chair?
No. That's the only time he's in that chair on the Enterprise D.
Ah.
So the next time you see him in that chair is in the Enterprise E in the Badlands. Not the Badlands, sorry. The Briar Patch.
Ah. Fascinating. I'd never realized that. Alright. So anyway, the crew discovers Tetrions in a junction box in Cargo Bay 4 that they ran warp power through. Kind of a small box for warp power, isn't it? But anyway... A long-winded techie explanation is that subspace has somehow created a link to the ship, although it's not supposed to happen. Yes, I know, I butchered that up. So, James, correct, help me with that. What did they discover?
Well, like I said, I think this episode gives you the first or one of the better explanations as to exactly what subspace is. And as far as I can tell, it seems to me that... I mean, it seems like subspace is just a set of parallel universes.
Or yeah.
Parallel dimensions that you can kind of poke into. Because I've always slightly been confused as to what exactly subspace is. But yeah, I mean, to me, it sounds quite reasonable. You know, someone that lives in subspace, in the same way that, you know, every now and again you'll find other types of space to live in, like fluidic space or whatnot. Mm-hmm. That can, like, poke in a hole using a high energy beam towards our reality, and that can, like, you know, that coming out in a cargo bay of all the places.
Oh.
And of course, you have to understand here that, you know, obviously time and space is relative. So the fact that they happen to be coming out in that particular part of the cargo bay as you're sweeping through space, potentially at warp, whilst rotating around the galaxy, is very convenient. But other than that, look, it's a magic hole. They're poking up through a magic hole.
Do I have subspace in my office here?
You do. It's like if you walk around behind, like, the sofa, it's like where your change goes when you lose your change. Falls into a subspace bubble.
Into subspace. That makes more sense. Okay.
I mean, where else would it go? Where else could it go?
Yeah, really. Okay. So when you do your laundry and you're missing a sock, it's in subspace. And then 2 weeks later, it comes out of subspace because now you've got an extra one. Mm-hmm. Who knows? Okay, so Riker goes to Deanna to discuss what is going on, and she mentions that others are having the same problem. Hey, why not let us get us all together and do that? And they do. So let's talk about it.
Yeah, so this is interesting, right? Because once again, I think that there's enough evidence, in particular with Data, there's enough evidence that something seriously is going wrong. And people are presenting with symptoms. And Troy's idea is group therapy. I mean, is this the best we can do?
That was Riker's idea. But yes, it seems like a pretty good idea. I mean, worked.
The scene that follows is fantastic.
Yeah. You
know, without question, it's fantastic. But the idea...
It's also funny.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, the leaps that... You know, the computer makes, there's 5,000, over 5,000 tables on file. And then it goes from one table to another table, seamlessly moving towards the one that it needs to get, as if it knows.
Okay, so I've got a lot of things to bring up here. First of all, why is most people that are in group therapy, why are they mainly the senior members of the crew? There's only one that's not, and we already saw her earlier in listening to Ode to Spot. That makes me very suspicious of how that targeting.
Because if you talk, they have to pay you.
I suspect that might be great. Might be true. Now, the holodeck scene in general, I think it's wonderful. It's so well put together. And when I say put together, I mean the idea of everyone getting together, everyone being able to bounce ideas off each other, and it slowly builds up to a more and more and more creepy place where people then realize, actually, you know, there's something seriously going on here. We've not just had a shared dream, or we're not just reinforcing each other. Something's going on. And I think that's wonderful. And, you know, the noises coming through. And I remember watching this as a kid and being scared absolutely witless about this.
Yeah. That's why I say this is creepy.
Now, having said that, and I think this is where Colin was going, when Troy says, let's make the table metallic, and it replaces a table with what is clearly an instrument for torture. I mean, how's that a table?
Yeah. Well,
and the sort of things and all, it's like it goes from a normal conventional wooden table to the one that looks like a stretch rack from medieval torture schemes.
Yeah.
And then it goes to a metal one. And then when they ask it to attach, like you say, to attach to the right-hand side, an arm at midpoint, and it attaches two restraining arms across the midpoint, completely cables and restraining bolts and everything, which you never mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then when they do, like, the panel, and, you know, it's exactly the right panel for the lights and all that sort of stuff. Everything is exactly, it's almost as if you, like, the computer was talking to the aliens and going, does this go here? Does this go here?
No, incline it 20%. There we go.
And this, I mean, also, I have to say that in this scene, it demonstrates that the computer can be a real pain in the backside, but only sometimes. Like, it's like you say, I want a restraint. It's like, sure. And it's like, there's a light source. What kind of light source? You know, a light. How far away was it? you know, about this far away. And how powerful was it? What color was it? It was. It asks these stupid questions, but only ever so often, right? It's like, give me water.
It's just being
how
sassy.
Cold?
It was doing it just to piss Geordi off.
Yeah, it's like when he says, like, make a table, and the first thing it comes out with is, look, dude, I've got 5,000 tables on memory. Which one do you want?
As if it could just come up with a table.
But the thing is, look, what did they... how did they cut down the quote-unquote table, the first one? I thought that it's like, give me a table. I've got 5,000 tables. What do you want? Yes, give me a wooden table that's big. It's like, oh, yeah, we've only got one of those.
Yeah, we got one
of
those.
Really?
Yeah, the computer's probably said I
still have like 4,500.
Yeah. The other thing is, all if it goes from a conventional dining table, when they say incline it 20 degrees, the table suddenly becomes this massive wooden structure.
Yeah, yeah.
From this tiny little table, and I'm thinking, God, that's a leap. You know?
Yeah. But I also noticed that it seems like every time LaForge is talking to the computer, he expects the computer to understand what he's asking for when he doesn't even have a clue himself. You know, if there was a light. Okay, how high? I don't know.
Yeah, and he's the engineer.
Yeah, how bright? I don't know. He was just there. Just give me a light.
But also, if there's anyone, I mean, would Geordi have had his visor on? Because either if he did, he should really know more data about the light source. And if he didn't, he would probably know less in reality, right? So yeah. How's that work?
Well, I'm assuming he didn't have his visor on because they would have been, I assume he got the bacterial infection from them messing with his optic links. Like
using it and wiping it places where it shouldn't have been wiped.
Exactly.
There was a bit where Crusher had to ask Geordi, have you been, using your visor for something other than, like, seeing?
I was just going to say, one alien says to the other, man, I've got an amazing butt crack itch. Here, use this. Oh, that feels good. Okay, put it back on its face.
Actually, there was also a bit in terms of the computer jumping ahead where, you know, Riker says, oh, there were some creepy sounds. And it's like, oh, you mean like this? So you don't have, you can't give me a table, but if I go, ooh, creepy noises, you can give me a good approximation.
Yeah, yeah. She's got 5,000 tables on file, but only a few creepy noises.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Can you give me more about the creepy noises? Anyway, go on.
Okay, and the final thing, and this might be an Americanism, but I have a big problem with Worf using the word jagged. Am I alone in that? He goes, well, we've got this scissor-like thing, and one's got a longer blade, and it's curved in, and then the bottom one is a jagged edge. Jagged's not the correct word to describe that. I mean, he means a serrated edge. And I found it odd that Worf used the word jagged. That's like a...
Yeah, it must guys, be an Americanism.
Would you guys use the word serrated? Is that a thing you...
No.
No, jagged. Okay. You call it jagged?
Yeah, that would have been a jagged edge. Yeah, I don't know. Really, it's serrated. I'm so not even sure what that word means.
Wait, it means...
jagged?
It means jagged.
Okay.
But jagged, to me, it just comes across much more colloquial.
Yeah.
Whereas you don't have a jagged knife. I mean, you would have a serrated knife,
right,
in my opinion. But maybe it's a culture clash. Like when I was on the airplane and I asked an American woman if he had any fizzy water, and they looked at me and said, I was absolutely nuts.
Carbonated water.
Do you guys not have fizzy water?
Carbonated.
But carbonated is a way of getting, or carbonation is a way of getting the fizziness in there.
Huh?
Yeah. So why would
Yeah, but you've got to remember, James, they call it soda.
Yes, soda.
No, fizzy water
some soda, some pop.
Fizzy water, sparkling water. Water that is sparkling due to natural, carbonation. Not like... Hang on, step back. When you say soda, I've always assumed that soda is... That's sweetened, though, right? Or is any fizzy
anything
water?
Anything is soda. Diet soda, regular soda...
No, but when I say soda, that's a sweetened drink.
Sometimes, but there's also diet.
Yeah, it's a fizzy drink. Is soda.
Yeah.
So if I have sparkling mineral water, could that be described as soda?
Soda water.
You know when you went to Vegas, James?
Yeah.
Did you have trouble ordering?
I did. I actually generally left the wife to order. She's better at these things.
All right. Yeah. I mean, they call it soda water, carbonated water, but not fizzy water. That's not something we use here. You know, we leave those in the boot.
Yes.
Okay. So anyway, so we have a table, metal, bright lights, restraints, scanning devices, and scissors with the jagged edge. With a very strange design, all of it strange, and there's just one more thing. Clicking, and when they realize, I've been here before. We've all been here! Even the no-named woman, who we'll never see again, puts her hands over her face like, or no, it's over her ears. Yeah, I don't want to hear any more of this. Hey, you know what I should do from this point on? I should get a snippet of that clicking noise and just leave it for the rest of the show. Oh, that's me doing that, by the way. Anyway. So anyway, Crusher decides to do a few more tests. You know, the ones that she should have done earlier. And discovers that Riker's arm has been amputated and reattached in such a way that no one could ever tell it had been done.
Okay, so I've got three things. Well, actually, I think it might be two. Two things to say about this. As a kid, I found this terrifying.
Uh-huh.
And you can kind of tell on Riker's face. It's like, hey, you know, they've amputated your arm and they've sewn it back on. It's like, sorry, what? But then the other thing is that the way the Crusher delivers this information, it is in such a matter-of-fact way. It's like, oh, look, yeah, they've amputated your arm.
Like that's something.
And I was like, and Riker must be there going, blimey.
Is there any chance they amputated some other part of me and put it back on? As he looks down. No, just your arm, bud. Just your arm. Because, okay, let's say that's true. They chopped off his arm, or part of his arm.
What was the state of his pajamas if they chopped off his arm?
Oh, they probably rolled his sleeve up. But still, I mean, even if in the 24th century you amputated an arm and you put it back on, there's got to be some look to it. No scar. It didn't ache a little. Remember when somebody gets hurt on an away mission and they bust a rib or like O'Brien with his kayaking, he busts several ribs and they put it back together and she says, it will ache for a few days, but you're going to be just fine. Riker had no idea that this even happened. No ache, except for a few micron change in his arm. No one would ever know what happened. Does that make any sense?
I mean, I suppose it can make sense, but you're obviously, at this point, you're given the aliens that don't exist in our reality a lot of technology that allows them to do stuff without any kind of impact, whereas in reality they shouldn't be in that position. But if we just step back and say, well, what is this supposed to show? I think from the perspective of setting up the story, as you know, you will be abducted by aliens in your sleep and they're going to do stuff to you and you're not even going to know it, is terrifying.
Well, yeah.
So I give that a pass.
The other thing that this brings up is Crusher's knowing that Riker's having trouble sleeping for a while now. Right. Now, if someone's unfit for duty, she's supposed to relieve them of duty. So why did she never relieve Riker of duty knowing he wasn't getting any sleep?
I mean, kind of Crusher's not that interested in this episode. Because this is the point, it's at this point where the dude returns and she just wanders over and checks up on him and realizes he's got a liquid polymer.
Picard finally does like Lotlou said not long ago, finally asked the computer if anyone's missing. The computer goes, yeah, dude, there's two missing, you know. They've been gone a while. Didn't think it was worth mentioning. How's your day going?
I thought you knew about it. Yeah. I mean, if I knew about it, why didn't you
know
about it?
Well, you're a captain, man. Do your job.
Do you think there's actually one guy in like security somewhere whose sole job is to keep an eye on this report? And then it's like, Worf says, we've got two people missing. I was, what? Really? And he just, I don't know, he's got a coffee cup over the display that's just meant that he didn't see it.
Well, that's the other thing you see. You see, Worf is head of security. Right? Yeah. And Worf is having these problems as well, but he doesn't bring it to the to captain's attention that he's having these problems, and he's head of security.
He ain't going to tell anybody. Why would he? It'd make him appear weak.
Well, he's head of security. If he's having these problems, then there could be, like, you know, they know they've had plenty of experiences now by the time these crews like been together for 6 years.
Well, yeah, but it's not affecting his work. He was a terrible security chief from the beginning.
He's got a pair of scissors. He's a security officer. What if someone comes on the ship and brandishes a pair of scissors at him?
But what I'm saying is he's been terrible security chief from the start, so really nothing's changed.
Yeah.
So anyway.
It just seems weird how all these people are all in their own little bubble and no one's telling the captain anything.
Yeah, really? Yeah. People are disappearing here. The computer doesn't care. Everybody's on edge. Hey, do you think it's happening to the captain at all? I mean, is it just only these few people?
It doesn't seem to be affecting Picard. It's not shipwide. It's just selective people.
Okay. And actually, the captain, I mean, Picard in general, I suppose, Patrick Stewart, he does take a very much of a, you know, back seat in this episode.
Yeah, he's very much in. Yeah, it's very much Riker-centric.
Yeah. Right. So anyway, we determined that two people were missing, as you mentioned, and they've been gone since 2332 hours, but the computer didn't bother to tell anybody about it. And there should be an alarm when somebody falls overboard, shouldn't there? You know, falls off the airlock. Uh-oh, we got one back there. Let's go back and get him.
Yeah, I mean, modern Navy, you know, any modern Navy has a protocol for when the man overboard.
Yeah.
So, you know. Someone missing off a ship in the vacuum of space would probably be a thing.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I mean, I suppose the only counter argument here is that it's very, you know, one would not expect anyone to be able to get off the ship. So why bother keeping track?
People get off the ship all the time. I mean, how many times?
But the number of times we've seen it happen, even in this week.
I mean, it seems to be dead easy to nick a shuttlecraft.
Well, so realistically, you know, Data proved that he was off the ship for an hour and a half. At that point, it's clearly a case of, Worf, we need to monitor every single person. Let me know as soon as anyone disappears. Shields up, right? That's what you do, don't you?
Yeah. He did write shields, eventually.
Oh, yeah, he did. He was shields up once those two were off. He didn't want them back. That's why.
Yeah, he didn't want them.
Yeah, because that's the other thing is we know you can't transport through shields.
Can't transport through shields.
So if they got transported off the ship, raising shields means they wouldn't get back.
Mm-hmm. They want them back.
Don't want them back.
No, okay. He didn't want Hangler back because, like Luce said, he was too busy with Lucy.
Yeah, Lucy.
Yeah.
Okay, so anyway, one guy returns and he's almost dead because his blood's turned to a polymer. But actually, in the end, he does die. They don't say it till the end, but we don't get to see any of that heroic save or non-save. So La Forge comes up with a plan to track the subspace domain these aliens are using, and they construct a homing device and Riker volunteers to take it. So what does Crusher do? Give him lots of monster energy drinks in his arm, of course.
Yes.
So
it's also the standard TNG fix is wear something on your arm.
Yes. Yes, he gives her that. She gives him that hypospray of monster energy. So that should keep him alert for a while. It even looked like once she hit him with that, Riker's face was like, whoa.
Whoa, I can go all night.
Like an instant
high.
Oh,
just one thing. Just one thing. Hagler, when he's returned.
Yeah.
At the end, Picard says all hands are accounted for. Yep. But Hagler's dead.
Well, it's accounted for.
It's accounted for, he's just dead.
He's there, he's just not, you know, alive anymore.
Does he say accounted for, or does he... No, what does he say? Hang on.
I thought I said all hands are accounted.
No, all hands are safe and accounted for.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's using that term loosely.
Maybe he said meant all safe and or accounted for.
Yeah. Everyone who's alive is safe and accounted for. Yeah, so anyway.
The rest are in the morgue.
So he gets his shot and he goes to bed. And, okay, so here's a question. Aliens were taking people either when they were asleep, or obviously they weren't asleep, they were awake, probably screaming the entire time they were there, and then they wipe them of their memory and send them back. Which one do you think it is? He's asleep the entire time, or they're there and they're awake, screaming, and then they go back, wipe them
out? I think in Riker's case, it was when he went to sleep. But obviously, in Data's case, they just took him and wiped his memory from that hour and a half.
Yeah. So yeah, it's hard to say.
Yeah, it's hard to say, yeah.
So anyway, but Riker wasn't asleep, and you could actually see that he wasn't asleep, and I'm surprised they didn't see that he wasn't asleep.
Yeah, but they couldn't detect he wasn't asleep because he had Crusher's magic remedy.
Oh, yeah. That makes sense. So he arrives to find Ensign Rager there being worked on and things going in and out of her arm. That was a little creepy. I mean, this is kind of where the story takes a really creepy turn. Even worse than on the holodeck. But you can see all these aliens. What do you think of the alien makeup? We don't see them much. We see the big bug eyes and the long fingers that they don't use.
No, which seemed totally inappropriate for the actual equipment that they're using.
Right.
It's almost as if the equipment they're using wasn't designed for their hands.
No. It also seems like they had their, the actor's real fingers on the inside where you don't see it. Just these big fingers just going over where they're grabbing them with the middle of their finger. It makes no sense, but yeah. So LaForge is having a hard time finding Riker, but he eventually does. And then the aliens start working on Riker. Pretty cool, huh? But when the ship begins its graviton attack on the alien realm, they begin to fight back. So after a while, you hear the clicking. They get a little faster because they're trying to figure out how to fight this thing.
Actually, there are a couple of things we've jumped over here.
Did I? Okay.
Okay, so the first thing is that when we see the real room, and I think it is really cool that you get to see the real room and compare it to what the kind of guest room was as they had the group therapy. Anyway, I couldn't help thinking, but someone was lying about being an incline because these things aren't inclined. So I don't think I'm gonna trust Worf anymore. But they mention about subspace that there's an infinite number of cells in subspace or energy levels in subspace, and they have to find the right one. And at one point, Geordi does mention that they've scanned the entire upper range, which, what's that, like the first half of the infinite number of cells they've scanned? How do they do that? That was quick.
They know what the ranges are? How do they know that?
I'm just assuming here that when they say upper, that's talking about half of infinity, which is still a big number.
Sounds like a frequency on a radio.
Yeah.
Okay, so anyway, the aliens fight back, so they decide to hit them with everything they got. And as the rapture begins to close, Wrecker grabs Riker, phasers that leg of one of the aliens. Did you notice that? He's like, he went to the bottom of his leg and started shooting up to his balls or something. Depending on that, assuming they have him there. And that, of course, knocks the alien out. Record.
Yeah, I know. This also raises a question of why the aliens didn't recognize it as a weapon. Or was they that confident he was knocked out that didn't think he was a problem?
Yeah, no, he's out. He couldn't do anything. That's what they assumed.
Yeah.
Alright, well anyway. So Riker grabs Rager and jumps through the rupture just about the time it closes up. Finally, we get this ball of light. And I was thinking, hey, Maybe that's another baby for Troy to give birth to. Oh, what do you think? But instead of impregnating Troy, the ball of light leaves the ship and heads off. Maybe they were just curious. You know, explorers like we are. Whatever, but this alien whatever is now floating around our galaxy.
And I actually do like the sequel that they did to this episode later in DS9. That clearly set up for a sequel, and it's unfortunate they didn't follow it up, right?
Yeah, no kidding.
I think they could have done something good.
They did follow it up in Star Trek Online.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, they followed it up in Star Trek Online.
I was expecting you to say in the books.
Or in the books, yeah.
No, in Star Trek Online, there's an episode in Star Trek Online. What's it called? Sphere of Influence. That's it. And they follow up on this, and it's Worf. He's in the episode as well in Star Trek Online.
Cool. Okay.
Yeah, so Worf is the link, and the table's in there, and Worf actually says in the episode in Star Trek Online, "I've been here before."
But I thought the table was inclined more than it is.
Yes.
How did I miss that part?
Although they didn't follow it up in the TV show, they did follow it up in Star Trek Online, and they did. It's a really good episode that they built around the clicking aliens and Worf being abducted before, and so, yeah, they did do a follow-up.
Yeah, you're right. That table is definitely not inclined because Riker kept having to bob his head up to look over what was going on.
Yeah, because it was flat.
Yeah, it was completely flat.
Maybe they just inclined it on Worf.
Yeah, really. Yeah, could be. Okay, well then, is there anything else that we need to discuss on this, or should we go to our final thoughts?
No, I've done all my notes.
Okay. Doctor?
Oh, no, I'm good as well. I am good.
Okay, now that I've guessed at our ratings, it's now time for our final thoughts and ratings on this episode on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst and 5 being the best. Colin, why don't you go ahead and start with the...
I like this episode. I think it's well written, it's well acted, the premise is really good. And when it came out, like I said at the start, X-Files was riding high in the ratings, alien abductions were all over the media. And they did it in a way that made sense and made it was a proper Star Trek episode. I liked the creepy nature of it. Even the aliens, they gave the aliens, like Lou said, exceptionally long fingers, big bug eyes, because you know all aliens in the old films had big bug eyes and stuff like that. So they did a lot of nice touches to it. Yeah, there's some things that we picked up on. But overall, it is a really enjoyable episode. And, you know, James and you are both referenced when you watched it when you was younger, when you first watched it, and it scared the bejeebers out of you.
Mm.
You know, this is what this episode should be doing when you're watching it. It should be making you a bit scared. It should be making you question things, you know. And I didn't get to, I mean, there's technobabble, but there's not loads of technobabble. It doesn't detract from the story. So, yeah, I really enjoyed it, and I would definitely give this a 4 out of 5.
All right. Okay. Let's see. I think I'll go ahead. I didn't even write any final thoughts. The episode is creepy. That's what comes out to me, especially in the last half as they're sitting on the holodeck all talking, yeah, 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 and it had this, too. No, it wasn't quite like that. It was more like this. And yeah, that's it. That's the one. It had the sounds and the clicks. And it just, you could tell the tension was increasing every time they got another fact, what they believed the fact right, to where we've been here before. Oh my God. So that makes me think, obviously, now that I think about it, We talked, were they conscious or not during this procedure? I think they were. They had to have been. They just kind of was given something to forget it until they started piecing it together. Or else how would they have ever come up with table, metal, armature, jagged edge, scissors? How could they have come up with that unless they were actually conscious and had their memories affected somehow? So that amps up the creepy. And then we get them there. And it is a creepy room. It's a very creepy room with some very creepy hooded aliens. Kind of wish they didn't have the hood. Why not show them? You're making up these aliens, and they're creepy looking for what you see. I almost kind of, did you think maybe like reptile-ish in a sense?
It reminded me of those fish people in a Manhunt.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Which obviously takes you slightly out of the terrifying realm.
Right. But, I mean, they had bumps all over their face, and it just, they did look creepy. And I think it would have been better if we had actually seen them without the hood. So, anyway, tech. I like the tech, and they have to tech talk for Star Trek, because that's what it is. I still think it was a great episode. I like it a lot. It's just creepy as all get out. But, so I'm thinking, is this a 4 or a 5? I'm really, really tossed. So since I'm a little confused as to what I really believe this should be, I can't give it a 5. 5s are, you know it's there. I don't have it. I have a strong 4. So I'm going to go for a 4. So, Doc, tell us why it's a 5.
Well, it is a 5, right? I think it's wonderful. I haven't expressed for a little while about how inappropriate I am at being a podcaster that reviews Star Trek episodes, because I just love all of it. This is a wonderful episode of Trek. It's very, very unusual. I don't think there's anything like this in TNG. It is kind of a nightmarish. Actually, I suppose there is night terrors, which isn't that far away. I'm under my own argument here. This is dreadful. I just loved it. I loved the atmosphere that there was. I loved the fact that in the end they did solve it with techity tech, which is as it should be. I loved Data. I loved Data coming in with the idea that he's going to write a poem to his cat. Which is just wonderful. I think that the way they use the holodeck, that scene is really, really creepy. I don't think there are that many people that watch this episode and it doesn't leave a lasting impression. Certainly not if you watch this episode like I did when I was around 15 or 14, and you know, you generally think that this is pretty, pretty spooky. And it's not really that spooky, right? There's no kind of gory stuff going on here. There's not really even a suggestion that you're being taken at your will. It's the unknown here. It's the fact that you're going to wake up tomorrow a little tired that is the enemy. Now, you know, what a Star Trek-y concept. I just enjoy this episode so much. I think it's great throughout. So I have no problem giving it a 5. A 5 is good. The longer a gap we leave between our recordings, the more likely I am to give episodes 5s, because I'll basically be coming on and thinking, haven't watched a bit of Star Trek in a while. Woo, this is Star Trek. Star Trek is good. So if you want me to become, you know, more critical of Trek, we're going to have to pick up the pace.
Oh, well, you don't have to be.
No, what I'm saying now is I'm so starved of Trek that if you give me Code of Honor, it's probably going to be a 4, 4.5.
Oh, no. You can't even pretend that. Anyway, okay. All right, so let's see here. That is the end of Schisms. Colin, I have you on next for Ship in a Bottle.
Okay, just let me know when you eventually get around to it.
2020.
Yeah, probably. Somewhere around there, yeah. After James has come back from Japan.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. All right.
I'm not entirely convinced I'm coming back.
Hey, did you guys ever hear of a really bad Japanese joke?
No.
Okay, I'm going to tell it because I live dangerously. American businessman goes to Japan, right? And he visits this geisha house. You know what a geisha house is, right?
Yes.
Okay, so he's enjoying this geisha girl, and he's giving her all he's got, and she's like, Oromashka, Oromashka!
Hang on a second, hang on a second. What? I don't think that's what geishas are.
Yeah, what did you think?
I don't think you give the okay, point you've got.
He paid for the extra geisha. Anyway, he's still pounding this woman, and she's like, Oromashka, Oromashka! And he's thinking, oh, she must love this. But anyway, the next day, he's golfing with this Japanese businessman and hits a hole in one. And he goes, what did she say last night? Oh, yeah. Oromashka! Oromashka! This Japanese businessman looks at him and says, what do you mean, wrong whore?
Oh. Lou, that is disgraceful.
And with that, it's time to go now.
When human feelings collide with alien powers, dangerous choices must be made.
If this child does not learn how to control her power, she may accidentally destroy herself. Or all of you.
I know I can resist.
Will her extraordinary gift go out of control?
Do you love me?
More than anything.
Or will a greater power stop her dead in her tracks?
Does she live or does she die?
On Star Trek, The Next Generation.
So join us next week as we review Episode 6, True Q, and our guest host should be Matt DeGeer. Colin, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me, guys. I'll speak to you both soon.
Yes, I hope so.